Welcome to the Diabetes Canada Healthcare Huddle, a podcast that invites healthcare professionals to listen in on the discussion as we explore a diabetes-related topic. Each episode, we will present a case study, then have a conversation with an expert about the clinical challenge. Finally, we will revisit the case and see how we can apply our new knowledge and tools. My name is Dr. Sarah Stafford. I'm an endocrinologist in Surrey, BC, and I'm joined by my colleague, Gail McNeil, who's a diabetes educator and clinical nurse specialist from Toronto.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today about our conversation about healthy relationships with food, such a critical topic in management of diabetes. Today, we have the great pleasure of being joined by Jasna Robinson-Wright. She is a registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator and certified intuitive eating counselor based in Ottawa. She is the founder of private practice Peace of Mind Nutrition and also provides one-on-one counseling and group services at eating disorders clinics, the Balanced Practice. Welcome, Jasna.
Thanks so much for having me on the podcast, Sarah. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you, Jasna. I think this is a really critical conversation. Obviously, our relationship with food is central to diabetes management. And I think this is a question that we encounter every single day. I can't think of any conversation I have with a patient where they don't ask me at least one question about food. So I think we really need to be able to be comfortable with these topics. Gail, is this a topic that comes up frequently in your clinics?
Absolutely, Sarah. Not only is it a critical conversation, but it's always a difficult conversation. So thank you so much for being here, Jasmine, today. I'm thinking of one particular patient I have. She's in her late 40s, and she's had type 2 diabetes since her last pregnancy when she was in her 30s. And she has tried, Jasmine, every diet I think has ever been invented, you know, and she, you know, is in that yo-yo, up and down, and she gets all excited, and then she gets depressed. And I know we have a lot of weight loss medications that are on the market, but she heard that they, you know, afterwards you still have to, you regain the weight. So she doesn't want to go there. But her last visit to me, she came in and she says, okay, I just hate food. I'm going to isolate myself. I am so tired of people telling me what to eat and to lose weight. She says, I'm just going to starve. Jasmine, can you help me with Sharna here? Really, she says one of many patients that express so much frustration over eating, and they end up, their relationship is just with food is very poor.
Thanks so much, Gail. Yeah, I think so many of us have heard something very similar from clients, that food has become really frustrating. Food might be becoming really difficult to navigate. And I guess the way I would start navigating this conversation with that case would be to find out a little bit more about it, to really get open and ask some questions and get curious about, when did food start feeling so frustrating? When did she start hating food? And what might be affecting the reasons that she's hating food? So often, I think we find, especially when someone's had something like gestational diabetes and there's been some very strict guidelines and a lot of pressure, we can feel like there's a lot of worry, there's a lot of guilt that we have to get it perfect, we have to get it right. And so I like reminding the client that it's not about perfection, it's about the pattern. And I would probably get curious about, was there ever a time when food wasn't so frustrating, when she actually had an okay relationship with food? And what was that like? And then I would probably start talking about, you know, there is no actual one-size-fits-all diabetes diet. There's a lot of ways that we can enjoy food and a lot of different ways that food can actually work with us to help us manage our diabetes in a way that still feels good for us.
I think that's a great framework to address. So we're going to jump into all of those topics. Let's start with, you know, people with diabetes. Obviously, food becomes very central to their relationship with their diabetes and management, and it's a topic of conversation all the time. How does that relationship with diet develop? And is it common to have a kind of a negative relationship with food?
Yeah, wonderful question, Sarah. I absolutely think yes, especially when there is any kind of chronic disease, like in diabetes, and especially when there is a lot of focus on food. If we think about, you know, all of the times that we're thinking about food and diabetes, if we're doing blood sugar checking, if we're counting carbohydrates, even messaging we get around preventing diabetes or managing blood sugars, reinforces that messaging about categorizing food. Is food good? Is food bad? Am I good? Am I bad when I eat that food? And I think also in the context of North American society, we get a lot of messages about food every day. Sometimes I like to dare clients or even us health professionals to count how many times in a day we're spotting that diet culture, just in terms of the media that we see, the messaging and the conversations that we have with other people. And it can be so hard when we're going through life under this context of sort of a weight-centric society and a diet culture that to maintain a healthy relationship with food.
Absolutely. And are there consequences of having a negative relationship with food?
Yeah, good question, Sarah. So I do think when we look at the research around diabetes management and blood sugar control and that negative relationship with food, there's been a few studies done on relationship with food and glycemic control. And while there haven't been a lot of studies, we do actually see that having a negative relationship with food, especially not having great body image and not being able to tune into the internal signals around hunger, fullness, satisfaction, meeting what our body actually needs, tends to actually negatively impact glycemic control. And then beyond that, if we think about quality of life and impact in general, if we think about diabetes distress, again, it's going to really impact someone's life. Also, much higher risk of disordered eating, eating disorders, if we're not having that great relationship with food.
I think the other place I see this relationship is the very close connection between type 2 diabetes and obesity and weight management. And so this relationship with food becomes very central to that process as well. And people are looking at weight management and weight reduction, and they may lose weight through modification in the diet, but then they often regain that weight. And is that relationship with food kind of part of how we approach obesity management and medical nutrition therapy as well?
Yeah, good question, Sarah. So Gail touched on this too with that case that she was talking about with her client who had gestational diabetes and is now really getting quite frustrated with weight and having a lot of messages around weight. And I think that we can get really stuck again in categorizing and categorizing weights and categorizing people's management and their risk of diabetes, their risk of complications based on a single number. And I think when we actually look at the research and we think about how many people do regain weight when they go on a diet, it's probably at least 95% of people if we're looking at any research that's longer than about 3 to 5 years. Even the recent obesity guidelines, I'm using obesity in quotation marks, talks about, you know, probably it's very unrealistic for most people to keep off any sort of substantial amount of weight and probably any clinically significant amount of weight. And if we're going to be regaining weight and that's causing guilt and shame for a person, we can be getting into a cycle of really kind of that yo-yo dieting again that Gail was talking about in that case where we're restricting food to lose weight in some way, shape, or form. We're feeling good about ourselves when our weight is going down. And then inevitably, there's a lot of changes in our body to try to defend our bodies against that weight loss that's seen as a threat. Our metabolism slows down. Our digestion slows down, our bodies actually get more efficient at retaining the weight and at retaining the food that it has eaten. And eventually, over time, we regain probably most of the weight, if not more. And that feels so frustrating. It can feel so defeating. It can feel like we're starting to hate food and hate ourselves. So yes, I think that makes complete sense.
Absolutely. And I think the perspective I always try to give is that the changes we make, we want them to be sustainable lifelong. So trying to make these dramatic changes and saying something is bad and I can never eat it again isn't terribly realistic when you look at the scope of your whole life. Eventually, you'll want to have those things. We need to find balance. And it's such a different perspective. I think Gail's case was really interesting because I do a lot of work in gestational diabetes. And because of the short time frame that we have, we'll often put these foods in like, no, we really can't have, for example, juice for the next 8 weeks, no more juice. But we know that's not realistic long-term. And the women all the time are asking us, you know, does this mean I have to do this forever? Or can I go back to my normal after I have the baby? So looking at kind of these lifelong changes and perspectives, I think is really critical. Now you had this concept you introduced about intuitive eating. What is that?
Yeah, great question. So intuitive eating is, it's a framework for eating that incorporates about 10 principles and a variety of skills that really is a measure of how well a person is able to incorporate rational thoughts. So some logic, some nutrition education, well as emotion and instinct around food. And it's quite a fancy word that sort of describes actually how humans are naturally born to eat. If we think about the way a baby eats and the way a baby is in tune with its hunger and fullness skill, sort of hunger and fullness cues, babies are naturally born intuitive eaters. And somewhere along the road, we start to lose that ability through diet culture, through messaging, through our own experiences, even through sort of management of specific disease states sometimes. So if I think about what the principles of intuitive eating include, they're really all in line with the concept of health at every size, or HAES, if those listening are familiar with that. So health at every size is the idea that all people in all shapes and sizes of bodies are deserving of appropriate care for themselves and access to adequate health care. It also is a concept that includes the idea that we're going to be trying to have sort of encouragement of nutritious eating, movement for the purpose of enjoyment, and not only for the purposes of weight control. So intuitive eating includes the idea of rejecting the dieting mentality, or the idea that we should be and have to be trying to control our weight. We're interested in tuning into hunger and fullness cues and what kinds of foods are enjoyable and satisfying to us. We're trying to make peace with foods if we've had a dieting history. So reintroducing some of those foods, sort of that idea of, you know, yes, we probably can have juice again. We probably should actually sort of challenge the idea that juice is quote unquote a bad food. There's even a couple of studies that were done by Kwanzaa and colleagues in 2019 that looked specifically at women who'd had gestational diabetes. And if they were more intuitive eaters at the 6 to 8 week postpartum mark, and again at the 1 year postpartum mark, they actually had much better fasting blood sugars and much better A1Cs than if they were less able to tune into those food, into those cues around hunger and fullness, and reintroduce foods and rechallenge those foods. Intuitive eating is also about challenging the food police, or kind of rethinking and reframing, where do those thoughts that are negative about food come from? Do I really believe those? Do I have evidence for those things? Or perhaps I can actually think about this in a different way, maybe a gentler way. We're also thinking about how to cope with emotions with kindness and gentleness. So learning some new skills for coping with emotions that might not include food, and still being gentle with ourselves if using food is still one of our coping tools. So not beating ourselves up about it. And then we're learning to respect our body and accept the size and shape that we're in, and also thinking about movement in a kind and gentle way and nutrition in a gentle way that incorporates those principles of intuitive eating and also honors our health. So honors diabetes management, evidence-based nutrition.
Does intuitively eating look different if you have diabetes?
Yeah, great question. So I think there is this misconception that if we have diabetes, we can't intuitively eat. And I think the research on intuitive eating and diabetes has actually shown some promising results. It just might look different. So a good example would be, you know, if someone was feeling very stressed, they might not have hunger skill or hunger cues at that moment. Stress can be a disruptor for normal hunger and fullness signals. And similarly, if someone's experiencing hypoglycemia, they might not be having hunger and fullness signals in the same way that someone whose blood sugar is at sort of the normal range. We still absolutely do need to be treating hypoglycemia, probably with food. We still absolutely need to be trying to prevent hypoglycemia, managing hyperglycemia, even if those hunger and fullness signals are disrupted. That doesn't mean that we can't still sort of tune in when we're able to and cope with our emotions in a kind way, respect our body, and start to reframe negative messaging around food.
Perfect. So, and I think this is something we have had in conversations as well with patients as we start to use agents like the GLP-1 receptor agonists that bring back that feeling of satiety and fullness. And often when I'm talking to people about side effects and expectations with those medications, I'll say to them that this might recover that sense of fullness that you haven't been listening to for many years, and really try to listen to your body and feel that sensation of fullness so that it can help you kind of guide your own eating. So I think that's very in line with what you're saying as well. So it sounds like, you know, really the messaging is listening to your body, being kind and gentle, and understanding that there's a place for everything, that there needs to be balance, and that we can achieve kind of this healthy relationship with food over time. Is that kind of the message you're looking at?
Exactly. Yeah. So we want to be kind and gentle with ourselves. We want to give ourselves some slack a little bit, right? It's not about perfection. It's about the pattern. One high blood sugar is not going to make or break our health. Similarly, one type of food or one eating occasion is not going to make or break our health.
Gail, having had this conversation with Jasna, do you have any thoughts that you can take back to clinic when you're seeing patients again?
Oh my land. Thank you. There's so many different ideas that have come up there. I really like the very beginning though. And I know this isn't all the basic counseling, but I only met Sharma when she was after her gestational diabetes. So your question as to when was it all right with eating, like when did this start? I think is a really, really good idea to start back there and to start investigating her emotions, as you said, about the guilt and the shame. And then you called it the diet culture, and to take a look at that and be aware of that and forget the words good and bad and concentrate on what is the best for her to eat for herself, I think is what you were suggesting. Is that sort of what you're saying along the way? And for her to think about what she's doing. And I really like, Sarah, I think, put it well together as far as intuitive eating. I've heard you say, you know, what's the purpose of eating? Have her looking at that. What joy does she get out of eating? And the one I think that really, really is important is the self-compassion, is stop beating herself up. And let's look at what she can do and get back into a cycle of more positive scenarios. As you said, reframe, right, the actual messaging that she's there, and find where she can find the joy in eating. Because I think, Sarah, I think we're going to see this with a lot of our patients as the medications are sort of starting to wane, or they stop taking the medications because we can't have them or whatever. And I think this is a really important message for all our patients, whether they're taking those medications or not, is that we need to look at the whole idea of having a very, very positive relationship with eating and how to tune ourselves into it. Even without the help of the medications. But so thank you, Jasmine. Great point. I will go back to Sharma with a lot more information and a great way to, because she's looking for sustainability. And that's what you're giving us, I think, in this time, what you're talking about, the intuitive eating is a sustainable way to keep going. So that's my thoughts anyway. Sarah, what's yours?
No, I think that's great. This is a really wonderful conversation. Jasna, thank you so much for giving us this perspective. And thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
For those who want more information on this topic, a webinar is available now at guidelines.diabetes.ca/webinars.
Please help us improve our future podcasts by filling out the survey in the show notes. Thanks for joining us today. If you have questions about the episode or about becoming a member of the Diabetes Canada Professional Section, please email professional.membership@diabetes.ca. Special thanks to Adam Humphreys for providing the music for today's podcast.